in terms of putting a lot of views of people from the so-called left and from the so-called right. And I'm glad to see that they put her in. Sometimes people of the more establishment types look upon her as way too much of a firebrand for them to handle. Anyway, she wrote an article called Iris Makes Chilling Proclamation. And I see that may not be another caller. We'll see. September 16th, the IRS hosted a press conference to announce a new partnership with the states. And basically, she says the IRS and the states were going to partner up to further violate the rights of Americans in the quest to generate more revenues. And she says a very chilling remark. It's made by a senior IRS official by the name of Terry Lemons. And someone from the New York Times asked Terry Lemons of the IRS, a very high-up official, why won't the IRS answer questions set forth in petitions from We the People Foundation? Now, a little background there, that We the People Foundation is headed by Bob Schultz, and they have basically petitioned Congress many times, held nationwide conferences, and their basic petition to the United States government is, number one, was the 16th Amendment ever passed? And number two, does it really apply to most Americans? And they have had agreements by the government that they would actually meet and talk this out. And three times now the government made a commitment to have a meeting and then backed out at the last minute. Three times they've done so. They've surrounded the IRS building in Washington and sent numerous letters to every congressman to petition redress grievances, and it basically they have been stonewalled throughout. So this person from the New York Times is asking this IRS official, why are you ignoring We the People Foundation and their petition? And according to this reporter, Lemons said that the government is answering petitions through enforcement actions. The government will now answer legitimate petitions for redress a grievance under the First Amendment through the use of brute force, which D.V. Kidd describes as pretty much chilling. And that's right. It's one of the first, right there in the First Amendment, a redress of grievances. And they have done everything legal, proper, and everything you could possibly do to have a legitimate redress of grievances. And again, they're just being stonewalled. And as I say, you cannot have both a Bill of Rights and an IRS. You can have one or you can have the other, but you cannot simultaneously have them both at the same time. She quotes Patrick Henry in his famous Give Me Liberty or Death speech in 1775, and he talks about how at the time, 1775, the American Revolution, how they did absolutely everything, petitioning King George, that's King George of England, not King George of Washington, D.C., doing everything they could possibly do to get the king to respond. We have done everything that could be done to avert the storm which is now coming on. We have petitioned, we have begged, we have supplicated, we have prostrated ourselves before the throne. Our petitions have been slighted, and additional violence and insult is upon us. Our supplications have been disregarded, and we have been spurned with contempt from the foot of the throne. In vain, after these things, may we indulge in the fond hope of peace and reconciliation. Now, she asked D.B. Kidd, do these words ring true today? We, the people, have petitioned and received nothing but arrogance and silence from our servant government. Well, that's the whole thing. When you have government that has an unlimited source of funds, government at that point in time ceases to be your servant. It will always be your master. And that is the status of we, the citizens, here at this point in time. Well, I see we're approaching the end of our show here, and appreciate your listening, and I will be with you next Monday at 7 o'clock. Thank you very much.
Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief, the editor of World Affairs Brief, and we're going to be, of course, talking about what's going on in the world today. Joel, thank you so much for being with us.
It's always a pleasure to be with you, Stan.
Well, let's see, what are we going to be talking about today? Because, of course, Joel's always putting out a New World Affairs Brief. Sometimes I've read them, sometimes I haven't. But I will tell you, when I finally get them, I always read them from beginning to end, because Joel always has provocative ideas and challenging concepts. So what are the major issues you'd like to talk to our listeners about tonight?
Well, I'd like to cover a little bit about the latest maneuvering of the United States vis-a-vis the resolution at the United Nations on Iraq. But I'd like to move in as the body of our discussion tonight. What I usually give in October is a revision of my big picture scenario, that as I try to take back and tell my subscribers what I view as the big picture, how the threat towards World War III is progressing, and how the loss of our sovereignty is occurring, and how much we've moved toward that. And I try to give some indication if there's been any change in my estimate on timing as to when I think war might come to the United States, and when this new world order may be ushered in.
Okay, fine. Well, it's, you go for it.
Well, it's very interesting. In the latest iteration of the U.S. version of the new resolution concerning self-governance in Iraq, they have made a very token small change to set a deadline. You know, this is what France and Germany and Kofi Annan of the U.N. have been demanding, is the U.S. give a deadline for transition of power to the Iraqi Governing Council. And it's very telling that the United States made the appearance of a change to a deadline, but it's really a deadline to set new standards for a future deadline. In other words, it isn't a deadline at all. The proposed language on Monday specifies setting a date of December 15th for the Iraqi Governing Council, according to the New York Times, to begin taking on more power. And this is not true at all. This is spin they're putting on it. What really is in the language is that the Iraqi Governing Council must set a time schedule. In other words, it's a deadline for the Iraqi Council to set a time schedule for the rewriting of a constitution, which will eventually lead to the setting of elections. Now, there's a stipulation in this language that states that the Iraqi Governing Council must set this new constitutional language in consultation with the governing powers, meaning the United States. So in essence, they haven't done anything at all about actually giving a deadline for transition of power. They simply gave a deadline for the Iraqi Governing Council to specify when they're going to rewrite the new constitution. And they don't get to rewrite the new constitution, and the U.S. does it for them with their body of experts. So it's more rigmarole. You know, if there really wasn't an ulterior agenda, Stan, in this Iraqi issue, the U.S. would very clearly be able to state, we're going to be able to turn over more power, you know, on December 15th, and elections will be held at such and such a date. And that would be it. They'd simply work towards those goals and make sure that they happen. But the mere fact that they continue to play games with this deadline indicates they have no intention of submitting to this deadline, but are simply attempting to placate world criticism relative to it by throwing out these red herrings or straw men, if you will, so that they can poke fun at things.
Well, you know, it's really very interesting, Joel. It would appear that we are going to try to rebuild Iraq as exactly as we did with Japan and Germany after the Second World War. And You know, if you see what this $20 billion that they're requesting just for internal structure rebuilding, $150 million for Children's Hospital in Basra. Well, apparently Congress cut that out. But, of course, then they're going to put the money to $450 million that's going to be used to rebuild health clinics all across the country. Now, why should we have more health clinics there than they had before? I thought we were just going to, you know, try to free the people. But obviously we're going to redo their educational system. We're bringing in Arab language television, and everybody's going to have a television set, and then we're going to begin to program their minds. We're going to redo financial system, create a new central bank for them, which apparently they've already done, change their education, the total restructuring of this society. And of course, this is not going to be done in a matter of just a few months.
Well, you're absolutely right, Stan. This extensive reorganization, I mean, the judicial system, the agricultural system, you know, the infrastructure of electricity and power, and by the way, electricity is already back to pre-war standards, and they're building more. They're making first-class grid out of this Iraq, which will even supersede what we have here in the United States, and American taxpayers should be outraged the fact that we don't have any money to put into our infrastructure, and we're rebuilding another country to higher standards. And in my estimation, the U.S. plans will stay there a long time. There's no way, even in 5 years, that these plans will be complete. They will require increasing amounts of funds, not decreasing amounts of funds. Even if you look at the medical system, when you're going to try to enforce Western medical standards upon this, you're talking about billions of dollars. You're talking about a system, as in the United States or Canada, that requires increasing amounts of funding. They're going to want MRI machines in every hospital and all of these specialized test equipment, and this will be an ongoing thing. These machines go out of date in 5 years. They'll want an upgrade of all of this. I don't see any end of this intervention, and I think the U.S. will have an excuse to be staying there for many, many years.
And this is really so totally unjust, because certainly with all the massive oil wealth there, why, we could lend them the money to do it. But we're saying, oh, no, we can't lend them the money because they're already burdened with a tremendous debt to Germany and to Russia, and they've got to pay that money back to Germany and Russia. And then I think there's about $200 billion, $100 billion to Germany and Russia and maybe France, I'm not certain. But then they owe $100 billion to Kuwait for war damage. So they've got
millions, Stan.
Is that millions?
Yes, millions, not billions.
All right. Well, anyway, of course, we can't, though, make them, pay back the money we're going to give them. We've got to make this as an outright gift because they owe so much other money.
That's a very interesting point you make because, you know, there's no intention to pay back the American taxpayer for what they're putting in here, and yet they're making sure that our most hostile critics, especially Russia, is going to get paid back in full. And what was their money for? For providing arms to Saddam Hussein. Why should Russia get repaid for providing arms to Saddam Hussein?
Well, maybe nothing as it appears to be.
Well, obviously, this is part of what I'm describing in my update, which I do in October. The big picture is that nothing has changed in terms of the continued plan to build up the best enemies, as you say, often than money can buy. And Russia and China are being built up by this largesse of U.S. aid and trade and technology transfers.
Well, I think that the Americans should be incensed that we can't rebuild our grid, but we can rebuild their electric grid. We have a shortage of funds, here in the United States for so many things. But, of course, we can provide a new educational system, a new medical system, a new judicial system over there.
And state of arts, self-telephone system.
Right. And, of course, the American people should begin asking, what is this really all about? What is there another agenda behind what's going on?
Well, of course, one of the agendas, and I think it's a secondary agenda, but it's a very real one, is that all of this building up to American standards gives the administration an excuse to give all of these bids to American companies. And frankly, the Iraqis are very incensed that they are not being allowed to bid, on any of this equipment or upgrading. And what it really does is make all of the infrastructure of Iraq totally dependent upon American contractors, because this will be an American equipment or European equipment going in. The Iraqi people, businesses, will not have the experience, having not installed it, in maintaining it. So I can see that there's going to be a permanent colonial-type presence of American advisors and expertise and engineers and doctors and lawyers, always constantly needed to continue to upgrade these systems, which are American systems that are being implanted on Iraq.
I noticed in one of your recent World Affairs briefs, you commented, as I have said several times, we're sending over professional administrators from the United States with minimum five-year contracts. Gee, why aren't they telling the American people we're planning on being there 5, 10, 20 years or more?
That's right. That's exactly what that means. They have no intention of leaving soon. So, you know, maybe we ought to backtrack a little bit and let's talk about the big picture, what I view as the reason for this.
Okay, go for it.
Obviously, you know, the left, which is generally critical of the Bush administration, calling it a capitalist organization or greedy capitalism, they view the oil issue of capturing oil in Iraq to use, or these no-bid contracts to Halliburton and others and Bechtel, as the primary reason. This is a good old boy network. All of that is true. It is a good old boy network. They do lure companies into entanglements with government. They actually put out the word subtly, or not so subtly, that if you want to be wealthy as a corporation, you have to do business internationally. And in order to do business internationally, you must be in the good graces of the Bush administration, because we can either make or break you internationally and facilitate your getting huge contracts or not. And part of the payment, then, is allegiance to the Bush administration. I mean, they offer all kinds of benefit. And it's not just the Bush administration. Obviously, this was going on during the Clinton administration. They had carte blanche to engage in illegal tax avoidance schemes, like 900 offshore tax shelters that were done in Mediterranean and Caribbean island tax havens. These would have triggered an automatic audit had any normal corporation done this, but corporations like Enron and, of course, Arthur Andersen, who provided all the expertise for this, did so because I think they had an insider relationship and a carte blanche immunity from these kinds.
Isn't it interesting? About every two or three years, we come up with a new set of laws, you know, to close the tax loopholes for the very rich. And lo and behold, when we get that new legislation through, usually our taxes have gone up, or they've closed the loopholes for us, but they've made them for the big corporations. And you would think eventually the American people would begin to understand it's all a scam.
You know, speaking of the tax thing, I wanted to comment on a major change that I think they've made in strategy relative to taxation and the deficit. I believe that the insiders who control things know that they are creating a purposeful antagonistic atmosphere against the United States, which will lead to World War III, which will lead to a direct attack, nuclear preemptive strike on the United States. I think that's the whole reason behind antagonizing the Slavic world by intervening in the Balkans. I think that's the reason for antagonizing the Muslim world by intervening in Afghanistan and Iraq, and soon to be Syria and Iran. All of that builds great hatred toward the United States among the two major constituencies of Russia and China. These are the two major surrogate popular bases in their own countries that cause them to, will allow them to justify someday attacking the United States.
And, of course, we've established the idea of preemptive war. We have to have preemptive war. That's because we couldn't wait for them to attack us. We had to attack them first because, of course, they were a threat to us, a potential threat. So you know, those weapons of mass destruction could be used on New York at any time.
And, in fact, Vladimir Putin, the week after he met in the so-called friendly chat with President George Bush at Camp David, Maryland, just issued a press release yesterday that he has inculcated the doctrine of preemptive strike on any perceived enemies of Russia as the standard operating doctrine of Russia.
Well, of course, how can we complain about that when we have established the concept of preemptive war?
Exactly. And I think one of the reasons for doing so is to make sure that Russia and China would also feel justified under international law for doing the same. But going back to the point that I was making about taxation, I really think the powers that be that control both political parties have made a major decision. I mean, they've always worked under the premise, having learned sad lessons by trial and error, that you above all, you don't inconvenience the majority of people. And there's no way that you can begin to pay off the debt or even the new debt that the Bush administration is creating by taxing the American people. It would be about $60,000 per family. Nobody has that kind of money. There's no way the debt's ever going to get paid off. And it's increasing dramatically. I believe that the change that they have made is that they're going to continue to entice people with support politically for fiscal conservatism by giving them tax cuts. At the same time, they're not going to ever reduce government spending ever again. In other words, I think they're going to begin a major run-up of the deficit. They have very few economic tools to use to control this major recession that's coming. They've gone down to 1% interest rates. They can go a little bit further to 0% interest rates, but then they're pushing on a string. What they're really going to do, I believe, is start to simply run deficits continually and continue to as well cut taxes. It's completely irresponsible. They never intend to penalize the American people. They never intend to give them a tax bill. What they intend is for this to all end in World War III. A preemptive nuclear strike will simply turn us into a third world country. Our debt will be worthless. We will simply default on all of it in war and start over again, building a new world order under the UN. And I think that's why we'll never see another tax increase, no matter how big the deficit gets.
Well, of course, it's rather frightening when you contemplate. They say that the deficit this year is going to be $378 billion. And, of course, they're saying, gee, this is so much better. We thought it was going to be over $400 billion. But then they don't talk about the money they're stealing from Social Security, which is, what, $150 or $200 billion. So we're talking about this year a $500 billion deficit, next year up towards $750 billion deficit. These figures are just unbelievable. And, of course, if they ever have to raise the interest rates, and they're starting to pay 6 or 7% interest on this massive federal deficit, why, it'll just go right through the roof.
Well, I'll tell you one other thing, Stan. They're not staying within any of the budgets. They're already spending billions more than Congress has ever allocated. In other words, the budget process is going through Congress is simply a charade. They're spending far more than, I mean, it's totally separate now. What the government creates in deficit spending doesn't depend a whit on how much has been allocated in the budget.
Well, of course, this new $87 billion on top of the previous $79 billion is, this is going to have a tremendous impact on our situation. You can't keep spending money you don't have indefinitely. And this is what third world countries do. And, of course, they eventually collapse. And I don't see any reason why we should not think that our government, certainly our economic system, will collapse. In fact, the IMF came out with a report not too long ago suggesting that the American economy and currency could collapse almost at any moment. Did you see that?
Yes, but I don't believe that necessarily. The U.S. has a much broader base of absorption of dollars. What it's going to do is slowly continue to deteriorate the value of the dollar. It's interesting that the European Central Bank chief just came in and made statements like Alan Greenspan does, which dropped the euro down about 1%. In essence, he was saying, the euro climbing against the dollar had nothing to do with the relative weakness for the dollar, and immediately the dollar climbed again, and the euro lost value. I think that was, supporting the dollar from their point of view. This is a major charade because all of these governments are having to inflate their currency almost as bad as the United States to try to keep alive in this worldwide recession that we're going through.
Well, of course, you lower your currency so your goods are more competitive in the international market, and that's the thing. That's why, of course, all the other countries are devaluing their currency so they can continue shipping to us, and why we're lowering our currency so we can export, but of course, anybody who keeps their currency up can no longer export. People can't afford to buy their products. We're going to have to go to a break here, and when we get back, of course, we're not going to take any calls for the time being, because I would like to hear what Joel has to say. If we, of course, get towards the end of the program and we have some time, or we'll invite calls, but please hold your calls for the time being right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Joel Skousen, and of course he's the editor of World Affairs Brief. And when we bring our listeners back from the Northwest, why, we'll tell you how to get copies of this weekly publication. But we'll go ahead with your thoughts on where we're headed. You honestly think we are headed towards World War III, then?
Yes, I think it's irreversible, Stan. It's very sad to say that. But let me give a brief review of the evidence. All of us, and I might say that everything I'm discussing in this annual review has to do with a basic document called Strategic Threats in the Coming Decade, which I had written 2 or 3 years ago and placed in a big blue banner called Strategic Threats on the front page of my website, which is joelskousen.com. JoelSkousen, joelskousen.com. And if you want to read that, it gives a 21-page synopsis of the three major centers of power, which I view, the Chinese, the Russians, and the Western New World Order globalists, and how they interact and how they intend to conquer one another. And so this is an update of that Strategic Threats of the Coming Decade. Now, in review, essentially, all of the threats that I talk about in that document are still growing. Russia is continuing preparations to launch a preemptive nuclear strike on the U.S., even though they announced today that they, for the first time, are not going to view the United States and NATO as the primary target of their military exercises. This is a tacit confirmation of what I've said for many, many years, that they begin every one of their military training exercises with a simulated preemptive nuclear strike on America. Now, that tells you, of course, very clearly what they're intending to do. Now, because they come out and say, we're no longer going to do that, has no more meaning in my book than saying we're no longer targeting the United States. I mean, that's obviously ridiculous, but, it's good for propaganda purposes. So all of those preparations are continuing. The huge military bunker and factory complex at Yamato Mountain is still being pushed towards completion, although nobody really knows how close to completion it is. The two major construction cities of 30,000 inhabitants each at the two major entrances to Yamato Mountain are still full of people.
And this is, of course, in Russia that you're speaking of. And this
That's
is
right.
an underground bunker where they expect to be able to protect their leaders and a large part of their population.
That's right. It's about 150 miles east of Moscow in the Ural Mountains, and it's not really a bunker system to protect people. They have sheltering facilities long since built around the Moscow area and around all of their military industrial factories to shield about a third of their urban population, only about a third. Now, that's much better, of course, than the United States.
We don't have any.
That's right. Well, except for our leaders.
Well, of course, but I'm talking about for the average individual.
Our leaders obviously know that something's coming. They've been building new bunkers, even as they've been closing down or turning over to public use some of the more prominent bunkers in the eastern Appalachian Mountains. But they've been building new bunkers, so obviously they wouldn't be doing this if they really believed that communism was dead. Certainly this is not because of the few rogue nations which might possess a few mini missiles. This is for a major nuclear attack that our government knows is coming. And, it won't come, obviously, till Yamato Mountain facility is ready. I don't know when that's going to be complete. No American intelligence agency has ever set foot inside. Russians continue to say it's a mining complex, but obviously by the types of material.
You're going to have to hold that thought because we're going to just bring the listeners in the Northwest right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and our guest, of course, is Joel Skousen. And we're talking about the fact that Russia is preparing for war. They have Yamato Mountain, a massive complex, for protection of certain aspects of their society. And, of course, they're in full production building new missiles. We aren't building any new missiles, but they're building new missiles. And where are they getting the money? Why, a good old Uncle Sam is providing money under one a precept or another, and then apparently the Russian economy is making at least some strides, aren't they, at the present time?
It's really still relatively stagnant. One of the major strategies is to feign weakness. They're doing that mostly with the economy, and the economy really can't grow very much because the Russians are really siphoning off almost all Western aid into the military-industrial complex, which, of course, is top secret. They keep the civilian sector starved down for capital and for transportation and all of those essential things for a free market. But the military-industrial complex is very, very busy and, you know, kept relatively undercover. Obviously, China is still an ally of Russia. It has continued to amass a huge cache of foreign exchange, mostly in dollars, even as it funnels billions into its massive rearmament plan. Nevertheless, I think China is still probably 8 or 10 years away from being fully prepared to take on all comers in a nuclear war. Thus, they will still continue to be allied for convenience with Russia. Russia is still the major supplier of direct arms to China, even though the United States continues to exempt military technologies to China. Now, the globalists are still marching toward their own version of the New World Order in the European theater. The European Union is really a Sovietized New World Order model, and it's moving along with a new constitution. They've decided to fast-track that. They're trying to pressure all of the smaller nations not to put up much objection, and that's usually what happens in a fast track, is to use that to quell the opposition and to limit debate. So we must remember the European Union was designed by its Marxist leaders to serve as a Soviet-style collective system, and though it isn't yet beyond recovery by the Anglo-American side of the New World Order, you know, they're trying to basically mold America, Britain, and Europe into their own socialist system, but it's a much less intrusive socialist system than what the Soviets designed. The Soviets really want to nationalize most companies, and the American and British model of socialism is to simply use the Fabian concept of controlling it and regulating and harnessing it so that you sustain the portion of the socialist economy that allows politicians to buy benefits from people and buy, you know, spread foreign aid around and those types of endeavors. When the capitalist economy starts to falter, then they loosen up a little bit and they deregulate a little bit, but only for the purpose of milking it further. So along these lines, American globalists are busy, well, I might say as a preface, I don't believe that either factions of the New World Order, the Moscow-driven European faction or the American or Anglo-American globalist faction, which presently controls monetary powers around the world, I don't think either one of them is going to get to a New World Order without war. And I think they've agreed that that isn't possible. On the Anglo-American side, you can't get past American desires for sovereignty and their allegiance to the Constitution unless you have a devastating war which targets America. Then they'll give it up easily, crying for safety and salvation.
That was really what was behind World War One, was to create such chaos and horror and terror and carnage that everybody would want a war, pardon me, would want peace and be willing to accept the League of Nations. That's why they had to get America into that. And that's why, in my estimation, why Churchill wanted to attack Gallipoli. I think 140,000 British fell and 140,000, 150,000 Turks fell in a totally senseless battle. But the more people died, the more, of course, willing the people of England and the people of Europe were to have a world government. It was only, of course, the fact America would go into that that, of course, prevented the League of Nations from becoming a world government. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And that's the reason why they brought about World War II, is to rejuvenate the need to have global governance.
And of course, the Japanese had tried to surrender at least 5 times over a period of 7 months, and we wouldn't let them surrender. And if you doubt that, we have an article out of the Chicago Tribune, and if you'd like to get it, we'll send it to you free of charge. It was actually written on the very day that we signed the peace agreement on the Missouri. And of course, we got a nice, clean, new copy of this. And what happened was the Japanese kept trying to surrender. Had we taken the surrender, we wouldn't have had Iwo Jima. We wouldn't have had the invasion of Okinawa. We wouldn't have dropped the bombs, but there wouldn't have been as much carnage. We'll be right back here in Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time I need to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and if you're out there listening to us, we hope many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. If you'd like to know more about that, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Let me mention that on November 29th, we're going to have a all-day seminar out of the Aptos Seascape in there, and of course we're going to have exciting speakers. We're going to go from 8:30 in the morning until 5 o'clock in the evening. We're going to, of course, have lunch there because it's hard to get to a place for lunch, and so we need to know ahead of time whether you're going to be able to come. If you would like to give us a call at our 1-800-544-8927 and make your reservation now, that's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like, of course, to put in a check, you'll have to call our 800 number, 1-800-544-8927, and get directions on where to send your checks, because we need advance registration. We have to know how many people are coming. But we're bringing in outside speakers. I think you'll find this will be a fascinating, fascinating program. So give us a call if you'd like to come. And it's at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course, the Aptos Seascape Golf Course, and that's the golf club, of course, where we're going to be holding the meeting. I think you'll find it to be a well worthwhile day, so we hope that many of you will be able to come. And then, of course, we suggest that you go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, where you can listen to our programs 5 hours every day and not get much of anything accomplished. This program and many of our other programs are archived there, and you can pull them down and listen to them. You have our permission to copy them. You have our permission to pull down our newsletters, which are there available on a regular monthly basis going back over some years. And many people have called and they wanted a copy of our discussion on republics and democracies, and you'll find that that's the November 2000 newsletter. But there are all sorts of fascinating material on our website at radioliberty.com. Now, the other thing that you can do if you're a listener, tell others about our radio programs. Tell them about our website at www.radioliberty.com. And then, of course, if you have a local radio station, why, of course, call that radio station and see if they'd be interested in having our programs. They are available. Most of our programs are available on satellite and can be pulled down by stations at no cost to them. And so talk to the radio people. If they're interested, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Joel Skousen. Joel, why don't you tell our listeners how they can get copies of your World Affairs Brief?
World Affairs Brief is a weekly news analysis service by email, and there's also a print edition that comes out at the end of each month. If you want to check out the email edition, that means we assume you have access to the web. Go to my website, joelskousen.com, and click on the World Affairs Brief button. You can read sample issues. All of the archives from 2002 on back are there, kind of a mini history of the world, you know, and how manipulation of governments has influenced the news. And if you don't have access to the web, you can call my office at area code 801-224-4746. That's 801-224-4746. And you could request samples of the print edition of the World Affairs Brief, and we'll be happy to send you out September's editions.
All right, fine. Well, of course, I can recommend the World Affairs Brief. I think it's fascinating discourse. So you're, of course, anticipating that China is not ready for a nuclear war, but certainly Russia, once it has all of its various areas secured, would not hesitate to, of course, have a preemptive strike on the United States. And this, of course, is one major reason why, despite the fact we've had the technology for many years to build an anti-missile defense system, we have not. We actually were able to build an anti-missile defense system in the early 1970s, but, gee, we just don't know how in 2003 we're going to be able to build one. The Russians were able to build one, but we are just can't hit a bullet with a bullet. Of course, the thing is that we originally had small nuclear charges on those, and we could just take out the missiles as they were coming in, pick them up early. But, of course, we are not allowed to do that anymore by our politicians who, for one reason or another, don't want America to be defended. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, it is. Let me put a yes or no in that. In other words, on the surface, the American is clearly prepping the United States for an easy defeat in World War III. They're not only encouraging and facilitating Russian rearmament, they are also covering for the fact that they're doing it secretly. And they know about the Russian preparation. They know about Yamato Mountain. They refuse to warn the American people that the Russians are attending this nuclear strike. They continue to play the role as if both Russia and China are partners in the war against terror. Nothing could be further from the truth. The United States actually appears to be accelerating the antagonism of the world, not only through the means that I already mentioned, intervention around the world, constant intervention. They plan on more intervention, and even Israel's becoming a surrogate of the United States for intervening. That's one of the reasons for the recent raid last week into Syria.
I thought of that one. I thought that they're really carrying out America's policy, and that's why we didn't condemn them.
That's right. You notice the hypocrisy there. Every time Israel tries to attack Yasser Arafat, America's favorite terrorist, who they continue to give $75 million to a year, they clamp down on Israel and say, you shall not do that. And yet, they kind of gave the back under the table permission to attack Syria, because Syria is one of those that is on the opposite side. That's the side that they really do want to prosecute terrorism there. And so they give the go-ahead and applaud that when Israel violates Syrian sovereignty and goes in and attacks a terrorist training camp. But when they attack the terrorist training camps within Israel proper, Israel or the United States complains. It's a very, very convoluted foreign policy that the United States is involved in.
But we were talking about the anti-missile defense system, and we really don't have any. And George Bush is making a big issue out of putting up 20 missiles to protect us. The Russians have 7,000 nuclear warheads, and we're going to build 20 interceptors. How gullible do they think the American people are?
Well, I used to think that the United States accelerating the deployment of this early missile system, even before proper testing, was meant to spur the Russians to attack earlier, because the Russians, I believe, would always attack before an anti-missile system got into place, fearing that it would blunt their major strategy, which is a preemptive nuclear strike. And yet, I think the United States keeps assuring the Russians that this system isn't intending for them. I think this system is clearly intended to pacify the American people, to make us think that we are defended. In fact, even without any missile system, the United States, I think it's, you had mentioned this, that 30% or 40% think we already have a missile system, defense system in place, and have had ones for years.
Because it's incomprehensible that we would not want to try to protect the American people from an attack when, of course, Russia is in full military production for war. And, of course, we're unilaterally disarmed.
However, I'm beginning to think now, though, that the Russians really do believe that the missile system really won't affect them. So, in other words, the U.S. is not being successful in spurring Russia to up their timetable. If anything, Russia is still very suspicious that Americans can't be this stupid to continue disarming, even as Russia continues to deny or refuse to follow through in even the most recent arms control limitation talk that they signed with President Bush. The Russians have made two subsequent announcements in the past, one just this past month and the other about 6 months ago, that they would not be complying with what they signed with President Bush. And you would think that President Bush would stop disarming our MX missile systems, but he has not. He continues to go forward with that.
Well, that's because he looked in Putin's eyes and he could tell he was an honest man. I mean, of all the ridiculous statements for him to make, but then, that's why they don't usually let him make any statements on his own.
Well, that's right. So despite the signs that the Americans are attempting to accelerate the schedule for World War III, I think there are several signs that indicate that the actual war will be later than what I had originally thought when I wrote the strategic threats piece on my website. Here are the reasons. First of all, the globalist and corrupt International Olympic Committee went out of its way to make sure that Beijing got the bid for the 2008 Summer Games. I think the Chinese intend to do everything possible to make sure that they take full advantage of this propaganda machine, which is the Olympics, to get national, international coverage, of course. And the communists have always liked to, you know, make maximum use of that. Hitler, of course, did that in the Munich Games in 1936, and I think the Chinese will make sure that they do not do anything to deter their positive global image prior to 2008. So I think the World War III, because China is an integral part of that Russian attack, Russia would only dare attack the West if China was guaranteeing their rear, and China intends, I think, in the beginning days of World War III to gobble up the entire Far East from Japan all the way down perhaps to Australia and New Zealand. They may take it easy on Australia and New Zealand because I think sometime during that World War III they intend to betray Russia and attack Russia's rear in combination with the West. And so I think in order to be a believable ally, they will not do much damage to Australia and New Zealand if they do take it at all. But they certainly will gobble up Taiwan, North and South Korea, the Philippines.
How about Japan?
And Japan. Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. They have a grudge match still to be reckoned with in Japan. You know, the Japanese did a great deal of damage in their invasion of Japan prior to World War II, and during World War II, and the Chinese have never forgotten that. So Japan is history. They're going to be taken over.
All right, fine. Well, of course, as we look at this, and certainly we have about 20 ballistic missiles against the 7,000 that the Russians have, 7,000 warheads, something seriously wrong with this picture. But, of course, the American people are totally oblivious to the fact that there's a very real threat. People say, well, why would anybody want, of course, to have a war with us? I mean, we'd retaliate, and of course, we'd wipe them off the face of the earth. But would we really?
No, that isn't true at all, of course, because with PDD 60, which is the Presidential Decision Directive, signed in 1997 by President Clinton, we've told our missile forces that you will not launch on warning. In other words, you'll absorb a nuclear first strike.
And, of course, we may not have very much for a retaliation because they'll take out everything they possibly can the first
strike. That's right. When the Russians know that we're going to absorb a nuclear first strike, they'll make sure, basically you said, you got a freebie, so they're going to give us all they've got in one shot, and that's what the U.S. is trying to induce. I think we'll lose all of our military potential, or about 80 to 90% of our military potential in the first strike. Now, what about our nuclear submarines? We also have a pact with Russia that indicates that we will voluntarily have agreed to make sure they don't feel threatened, that we will keep 50% of all our nuclear ballistic missile submarines in port at any one time. And we've said this to the Russians specifically so that you can more easily target them to assure you that we, you know, are prostrate before you, in other words, that we will not be a threat to you.
In fact, we've even taken a lot of the missiles off those submarines and filled the missile tubes with cement.
That's right.
What sort of madness is that?
Yeah. Well, you know, it appears to be suicide, and to a certain extent it is, but I don't believe it really is. Not that the U.S. government intends to defend America, but I think they do intend to induce the Russians to strike us, to remove us as a military power in the world, so that Americans are forced to give up sovereignty. They're forced to relegate their defense to the United Nations, and our own leaders will come out of their bunkers and say, oh, the Russians deceived us. We didn't know that they were preparing for war, which is a lie. And they will, you know, wave that big American flag and say, go, you know, let's join forces with the United Nations in the name of God, country, our liberties in the Constitution, let's fight World War III and defeat the Russians. And the U.S. will play the same stupid thing they did in World War II and feel like this is a sincere war for liberty. They'll sacrifice, you know, of course, there'll be much more devastation here. There'll be much more illness and nuclear radiation illness because people aren't prepared. If they think they're going to go to the hospital and take care of their, or have their medical insurance plans take care of them, they're really fooling themselves. none of the doctors and nurses are prepared for any of this either. They're going to be as sick as everyone else. And those that have not learned the wisdom of using alternative medicine and herbs and other supplements and things, and have stockpiled them beforehand, are simply not going to be able to get well very well. So it's going to be a very, very tragic devastation here. But the third, you know, I've talked about the fact that I don't, that I think the Summer Games will influence the timing. I think that the ineffective missile shield will no longer induce the Russians to strike early. I think that the coming recession or further depression when the second stock market bubble bursts will delay even further the implementation and deployment of our latest weapon systems in development. But, you know, the third process is has to do theologically with the Lord and when he allows a nation to fall. I think to a certain extent the kind of tribulation that nuclear war portends for the United States depends on the U.S. reaching a certain degree of wickedness, ripened in iniquity, you know, in biblical terms. And I'm not sure that the world or the United States is quite wicked enough yet to merit this kind of real wholesale destruction. Now, granted, you and I know it's very bad, but I frankly think it's going to get a lot worse. Let me give you two examples. On National Public Radio the other day, I was driving home, and a self-proclaimed liberal Jew was bragging about his plans to send his 11-year-old daughter to live for the summer with some lesbian friends in San Francisco, so-called to broaden her horizons. Now think about this. He was writing a piece, getting on National Public Radio with a tape recorder message, telling the whole world in a kind of in-your-face bravado how he was going to send his 11-year-old daughter to experience the lesbian lifestyle. He actually said he wouldn't mind it if she picked it up, even, or became a lesbian, but that he didn't think that she would do so. The piece was written with so much bravado and arrogance that it was very, very offensive. You know, that NPR chose to broadcast such a piece didn't really surprise me, but what did shock me was the cocky attitude of this parent, who obviously enjoyed flaunting his tolerance of homosexuality and the fact that he didn't consider it an evil at all. So it's very obvious that the homosexual movement is moving far beyond wanting simple tolerance, and they really are beginning to advocate open celebration of their activities. And now nothing could be more indicative of that than is what is happening on the television scene. Every one of these sitcoms now has their, and it's not just tokenism anymore, their homosexual couples, their homosexual outings. In one of the latest ABC programs called The Practice, about law, of course, one of the lawyer's mothers decides that she is gay and wanted her son to go to court and help get a marriage license so she could marry her partner. And the one in the program in the law office who was kind of the nerd of the law office objected to this, and they made him look like a fool, of course, for objecting. Well, a guy named Jim Nugent sent a letter of opposition or protest to ABC, and here's what he said. And it's not quite as important as ABC's response. He really didn't expect to get a response from ABC. But he wrote to them and said, ABC seems to be obsessed with the subject of homosexuality. I will no longer watch any of your attempts to convince the world that homosexuality is okay. The Practice, meaning the show that he's referring to, can be a fairly good show, but last night's program was so typical of your agenda. You picked the doofus of the office to be the one who was against the idea of the mother being gay, and you made him look like a whiner because he had convictions. This type of mentality calls people like me gay bashers. Read the first chapter of Romans, he puts in quotes, that's in the Bible, and see what the Apostle Paul has to say about it. Well, he got a letter back from ABC, and here's what it said. How about getting your nose out of the Bible, which is only a book of stories compiled by many different writers hundreds of years ago, and read the Declaration of Independence, what our nation was built on, where it says that all men are created equal, and try treating them that way for a change. Or better yet, try thinking for yourself and stop using an archaic book of stories as your lame crutch for your existence. You are a minority in this country, and your boycott will not affect us or our statements of freedom in the least. Now, do you see the difference here? This is no longer, you know, kind of a sly, subtle way of promoting home. It's in your face now. Can you imagine ABC writing a letter to a constituent like this with this kind of blatant attacks on the Bible? You know, I'm glad to see that they're this open in their disdain, because Christians may wake up and realize, you know, the world is just going to get nasty, and they realize we're a minority now. The jig is up. Any comments, Stan?
Well, I think, of course, that there is a plan, and we actually pull this down off of the Gorbachev website, Gorbachev Maurice Strong's website, talking about the Earth Charter, and then the thought they talk about, we've got to identify those people, you know, who are, of course, fundamentalists in their religious beliefs, and eliminate them. That was their statement, not mine. They pull the whole thing off the internet. I'm going to see if I can't get it up on my webpage. They're talking about the eliminating people with fundamentalist religious beliefs. These people are not kidding. They're deadly, deadly serious. So I think the day is coming when there's going to be persecution of Christians in this country. I'm not sure, though, that there are going to be enough people left here that really have the courage to take a stand.
To be persecuted.
It's a lot easier just to go along and get along and live the good life, at least for the time being.
Well, Stan, in summary here, what I'm basically saying is that I think that in the next 5 or 6 years, I think we're going to see a massive new level of outing of homosexuality where it becomes blatant. And I think a great many people and youth are going to be influenced. I think we're going to see major wholesale downturn in morality, much worse than what we've seen before. And I think our public schools are going to go into total corruption. Fortunately, it will force Christians, I think, to finally stop trying to improve an inherently corrupt public school system and get out. I think they need to be getting out. But my revised timetable for World War III is actually further on, despite the accelerating thing. I think the Lord isn't going to allow this to happen until we get another notch up in corruption. So I'm viewing that the window of opportunity for Russia and China to strike the U.S. will be in the 2009 to 2012 region, which is about 2 or 3 years further on than what I originally had projected.
Well, you know, I think that we're going to see increasing depravity here in this country. And the trouble is that the church doesn't want to address what this is really all about. Satan is alive and well, and his minions are here on this earth, and he's guiding the course of nations. And the church is so wound up in this idea of God is only love, which he is love, but he is also a God of judgment, and a God of judgment, and a God of wrath. And the most frightening thing would be to think of God's wrath. And we can talk about this from a geopolitical point of view, China, Russia, America. We can talk about the secret movements and the dark side of government. But behind all of this is this spiritual battle, which nobody wants to talk about.
Absolutely. And, you know, as a final thought, I want to make sure that people understand that I'm not saying that you can relax, because I think we have a few more years. I think it's all the more imperative that we realize that we've been maybe given a little bit of time to get our house in order, to repent, to be worthy of being, you know, spared some of this tribulation, to prepare for fallout. I have written some books on the subject of preparedness.
Why don't you go ahead and put a pitch in for them? That's all right.
Well, they can view those
books.
Right. They can view a review of those books on the website. There's Strategic Relocation, North American Guide to Safe Places, if you need to relocate out of major metropolitan areas or to establish contingency plans. There's a big book, the 700-page The Secure Home, which covers everything from A to Z on self-sufficiency and high-security construction. And there's another book of architectural plans on how to do a shelter in your basement out of reinforced concrete block, and that's called How to Implement a High Security Shelter in the Home. And all of these three books are available from Swift Publishing at 1-800-644-1057. And that number is also on my website if you go to joelskousen.com.
And do you think that Utah is a fairly safe place, or Southern?
Well, I think that the entire Intermountain area is the safest place in the United States, and that means eastern Nevada, southern Idaho, Wyoming, Utah, northern Arizona, western Colorado. It's a big basin that is essentially the center of it, which is Salt Lake City, which is not itself a good city because it's, you know, going to be one of the wicked cities of the world. But it's 500 miles or 800 miles to San Francisco, 500 miles to Denver, and trackless deserts and mountains to cross. So these intermountain areas are very, very good because in a long-term crisis like nuclear war, it's going to be the major social unrest and total dependency upon government services, which is going to break down, that are going to cause massive rioting and problems. So it really pays to have alternatives to get out of major cities, even if you have to stay there now to make a living. You need to make contingency plans to get to safer, much more rural areas, because there's going to be at least 2 years of famine after this war, and you're going to need to stockpile and be prepared to join together with other good conservatives and Christians to you know, help guide us through these things. And obviously we'll have to rely on the Lord a lot more than what we do now.
Well, I think that, of course, it's times of crisis when people turn back to God. As long as things are good, why, well, most people feel they don't really need Him, or religion is just something, well, you do on a Sunday, but forget about it the rest of the week. And yet, of course, if you read the story of the Bible, it's when times were bad and when terrible times of crisis that the children of Israel always returned to the Lord.
That's right. You know, not all of them did. You know, sometimes crises, even wars, brings out the worst in some people and the best in others. But I do believe that it will be part of the Lord's program of creating and cultivating a remnant that will be worthy of you know, making it through these trials. I think that He'll provide, by inspiration, pockets of safe havens and places. I think when the New World Order really gets back into the groove after people start to recover from this nuclear war, I think the amount of control and camps that are being used to put dissidents in will require that good Christians you know, have to go into a kind of underground, just like they had to do during the Roman period of great persecution.
Amen to that. Well, we're just about out of time. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
Well, you know, we really need to get our lives straight with the Lord. We need to develop a coherent group of friends that we can trust. We need to get out of debt and stockpile things against the day of tribulation, which I think is going to come.
Amen to that. Well, God bless, and thanks very much for being with us, and we'll look forward to talking to you a little later this week.
Thank you, Stan.
Bye-bye. All right, well, that was Joel Skousen, and I always enjoy Joel. I hope you do as well. And this is the time I certainly want to mention for our listeners up in the Great Northwest that we are going to be putting on a program here on the 29th of November here in the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. And if you are going to be in this area or you'd like to come down for it, I think it'll be worthwhile. It's an all-day program. We'll be bringing in some of our best speakers, and it'll start at, of course, 8:30 in the morning and
go until 5
in the evening. So if you'd like to come down, you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. I want to mention, of course, that Dr. John Ijmo is going to be speaking up there, and he's going to be on Thursday, September 25th at 7 p.m. at the Shiloh Inn. And Dr. Ijmo is an internationally known constitutional expert. If you'd like to know more about that, give them a call at 509-891-7428. That's 509-891-7428. And they're having regular programs up there, Institutes of the Constitution, in the Spokane area. And, of course, you can call that same number. Of course, that's 509-891-7428 to learn more about those programs that are being held on a regular basis there. And then, of course, we ask you, of course, to pray for America, because truly this is a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. We ask you to pray for our leaders and for our ministers. We ask you to pray for revival, because, of course, if the people don't turn back to God, God is going to bring His wrath on this country. And if He is a holy God, He has to do that. And lastly, we ask you to remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow evening at the same time, when we'll be back with you once again, this is Dr. Stan saying good night, and may the Lord be with you. this is Dr. Stavin here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. My views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And if you're out there across America, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls. We have with us right now John Gibson, and we're going to be talking to him about the Patriot Act. John, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you so much for being with us tonight. And
you're welcome.
Of course, I heard you talking last Saturday about the Patriot Act on one of the local stations. You were certainly being vilified and attacked. And but let's get a little bit into the background. Why are you concerned? And I'm going to play the devil's advocate, if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you concerned about the Patriot Act? Don't we have to do something to protect our freedom? Because after all, we're involved in a war on terrorism. And how are we going to take care of the war, these terrorists, if we don't have give the police the ability to be able to control them and, of course, to identify them?
Yeah. Well, to start with, I need to let your callers know that I'm with the Santa Cruz Bill of Rights Defense Committee. We're a grassroots organization that formed strictly to combat the abuses to our civil liberties, now legal under the Patriot Act, Homeland Security, various executive orders, et cetera. We're one of over 80 Bill of Rights Defense Committees across the country. We didn't make the name up. We borrowed it. You know, we're just one. So these things are springing up all over the country and have since the Patriot Act became law.
Now, did you have anything to do with the fact that our local city council has said that they will not participate in the Patriot Act?
No, we did not. That happened back in November of 2002. We formed about 7 months ago now, back in February.
All right, fine. So
yeah.
Now, what's wrong with the Patriot Act?
Gosh. How long's your show?
No. We've got an hour, and of course, I want you to bring out everything that's wrong with it. I'm going to play the devil's advocate now. I'm against the Patriot Act. I want you to understand that. But, you know, from the point of view of our listeners, why somebody's got to say, well, you know, what's wrong with passing legislation to secure our freedom?
Yeah, absolutely nothing wrong with that, as long as that's exactly what it does or intends to do. The problem with the Patriot Act is it was passed like literally 5 weeks after we were attacked on 9/11, and it's like 342 pages. And to research to read the Patriot Act is not to read it; it's actually research it, because it refers to previous laws and statutes, et cetera. Anyways, it's a very complicated thing to research. However, it's been researched, and the upshot of it is that we were attacked by foreigners on 9/11, and the administration went to Congress and said, look, we need to untie the hands of federal government to go after and prosecute potential terrorists to ensure that this will never happen again. We need to have this happen right away, on and on. Anyway, so they essentially bullied Congress into passing this. Congress did pass it with a very short order, and did it, most of them, without even reading it. Most of them were not allowed to get into their offices to look at the final draft because of the anthrax scare that happened at the same time. So, and what they did in the Patriot Act, instead of, again, we were attacked by foreigners, and the Patriot Act, most all of it, focuses not on foreigners, but on American citizens.
And really the important thing about this is to realize that there's not one word in the Patriot Act about Islamic terrorism. We were attacked by Islamic terrorists.
There's not
one word about that. They've redefined the meaning of the word terrorist, and it could apply to anybody in this country. It was never really intended to deal with Islamic terrorists, because they would have stated that, and they didn't. And that's the one thing that I think every American should understand, that all of this was legislation that, of course, the federal government's been trying to get through. They tried to get it through right after the Oklahoma City bombing. They couldn't get Congress to go along with it then. So as soon as tragedy on September 11th came up, they passed this legislation 46 days after September 11th. President Bush signed this legislation, it became the law of the land.
That's right. That's right. And most Americans believe that this was done in response to the attack of 9/11. But as you just aptly pointed out, this stuff has been around for a while, and this is just an opportunistic an opportunity to do to get it through. And Congress, you know, was cowed at that moment, you know, and passed it. So what we the thing that's important about the Patriot Act, the scariest thing about it, is that it creates a new crime called domestic terrorism. And domestic terrorism, an act of domestic terrorism, is defined as any act that endangers human life, that violates any federal or state law, and that appears to be intended to influence the policy of a government by intimidation or coercion. All right, what that has to do with flying planes into anything or blowing up anything is beyond me. But what does when I first heard that, what came to mind was acts of civil disobedience, like sitting down in front of cars to protest a war. That endangers your life if no one else's. It's against the law, and it's definitely intended to influence the government. And what's happened since recently, though, is or since the passage of it, and it's been coming out in the newspapers, and they're admitting, they're not only admitting to this, but they're essentially bragging about that they've been using the Patriot Act legislation to arrest people, to investigate people for crimes that have absolutely nothing to do with anything, such as, you know, money laundering and
drug smuggling and things of that sort. So they're using this legislation for things it was never intended, that Congress never intended it. But, of course, the Justice Department says, well, we can rationalize that after all. Shouldn't criminals be in jail? And now, of course, somebody's got a meth lab and they would have been sent to jail for 6 months. Now we can send them to jail for 12 years under this act. And, of course, they've been lying to the American people. It had nothing to do with domestic terrorism.
But what the significant difference is, see, they don't need to use the Patriot Act to go after money launderers or pornographers or, you know, whatever, many numerous crimes. There are already, you know, many, many laws on the books to deal with this. But the significant difference is the reason they choose the Patriot Act to do it is that the minute you're accused of being a domestic terrorist, the minute you are, they go after you under the auspices of the Patriot Act as opposed to some other law, then you know, due process goes out the window. Your right to have it's your attorney-client privilege, like if you've been arrested for this and you're having a conversation in jail with your attorney, they can now legally eavesdrop and record your conversation and use it against you later on. They can wiretap your phone without a warrant. They, you know, it's on and on. You begin to lose your rights under the Bill of Rights one after the other. And this is why they're choosing to do it under the auspices of the Patriot Act as opposed to laws that are already on the books.
And I think we have to find out that whenever you pass a law, that law can and will be misused. We passed the RICO law some years ago because we wanted, of course, to go after the wicked drug dealers. And that was the whole idea, the wicked drug dealers. And, of course, with a RICO claim, you not only can get the compensation, you get three times the compensation, you know, on the RICO claim. And then we suddenly find they're using RICO claim against people who are demonstrating in front of an abortion clinic. Now, you may or agree or disagree with whether people should be demonstrating in front of the abortion clinics, but imagine, of course, that they begin using the RICO laws against anti-war demonstrators, because that would be exactly the same thing. And the frightening thing is laws are misused. Now, there are a number of stipulations in the Patriot Act. And one of them, of course, I have a little mnemonic. It starts with A, and that's when you're absent. What's sneak and peek legislation? What's a sneak and peek provision there that allows them? What's that all about?
That's where they are allowed to. They get a warrant issued behind closed doors, and then they don't have to actually serve the warrant. They can serve the warrant later or never. Is the option. You know, they can postpone it indefinitely. But what it allows them to do is to go and walk. Go into your house, your castle, when you're not there, and look around. Get on your computer, download files, search through your books, search through your drawers, whatever, and then leave and never have to leave a warrant even, you know, notice that they were ever there. So they, you know, sneak and peek is why that's referred to.
And so they can come in your house. You will never know they've been there.
That's
they
right.
can take whatever they want to. They are not answerable to anybody. They've got a warrant. They have to have a warrant to do it. But they don't have to tell you they have a warrant or that they've searched your home. Now, you say, well, you know, for these wicked terrorists, I mean, certainly we want to go after, you know, the wicked terrorists to stop that.
Right.
But they're not using this against terrorists. They can use this against any citizens in this country. Yes, they could use it against the terrorists if they wanted to, but against any other law-abiding citizen, an American citizen and loyal citizen that they wanted to target. And that's a frightening thing. You know, we have certainly the Fourth Amendment to keep people from coming into your home. And if they come in, they have to have a warrant. But this way, they don't have to tell you they've come in. And whenever you're looking around your house and you can't find something, in the back of your mind is, gee, have they been here taking things?
Sure.
Yeah, you just don't know. What a terrible precedent this is. And, of course, it's all in the name, of course, giving up our freedom to preserve our freedom.
That's right. Exactly. And what Ben Franklin said, anyone who's, I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but anyone who's willing to give up a little bit of liberty or freedom for, you know, perceived safety deserves neither, you know. And that's exactly what this is about. But the key here is that, like all laws, Congress passed this law, and a lot of them are saying, oops, we made a mistake, we were sold a bill of goods, as they very well were. But what's not happening is not enough of Congress is standing up. You know, they could repeal this if they want it tomorrow. You know, they're not even really making an attempt to do it. They're going after, you know, part of the Patriot Act says that you can, that the FBI, et cetera, can go into a library and demand under the Patriot Act that they, the librarian, turn over your reading habits. And there's internet, they have internet now in the library, and also turn over your, you know, what you've been doing on the internet. And they have to do that, and if they don't do it, then they can face actually jail. And in addition, you they are precluded from telling you that the FBI is looking into your affairs.
Or anybody else, they can't tell
anyone or anyone else for that matter. That's correct. So, and that's the most insidious part of that piece of legislation. And certain members of Congress, including Anna Eshoo, there's a bill out there that they're trying to get that part excluded from the Patriot Act. But I mean, that's as far as anyone's going, really, is, you know, that we can see. And it's, you know, people need to be aware that Congress sold us down the drain. You know, the administration, you kind of expect this kind, at least I do, from administrations. But Congress is supposed to be our protector. Congress is supposed to, they take an oath to defend the Constitution and Bill of Rights from all enemies, foreign and domestic. And the Patriot Act seeks to eviscerate the Bill of Rights. And so it's therefore, you know, and they sign this into law. So they have an obligation to correct their so-called mistake.
Well, of course, the Attorney General says that, though, he wants everybody to know that we have never used this law, so this is not really a big problem.
Well, he never said that. What he said was that they had never used the law to look at anyone's library records.
Right, he's talking about library records specifically, right.
Yeah, okay, but they have used the law. There was a New York Times article that came out about 2 weeks ago, ended up in our Chronicle and our Sentinel here in Santa Cruz as well, and it talks about the hundreds and hundreds of investigations that they've conducted using the Patriot Act, which means they didn't have to get warrants, et cetera, and they've also had like 12, I think it was. I don't have the article in front of me, but I believe it's like 12 different people were arrested. One of them that stood out dramatically was a 20-year-old. They called her a lovesick 20-year-old woman who was on a cruise ship going to Hawaii recently, and apparently in an attempt to get the ship to turn around so she could go back and see her boyfriend, she left threatening letters around on the cruise ship. They arrested her under the auspices, you know, of the Patriot Act, and she's now doing 2 years in jail. And we're trying to research this right now to find out exactly, you know, what rights of hers were violated. We're actually looking into all sorts of cases as the Bill of Rights Defense Committee. It's one of the, you know, the many things we're trying to do to combat this.
Well, you know, it's really very interesting that Attorney General Ashcroft has said, look, why are you so upset about the Patriot Act? Let's just look at this one thing you keep talking about, this library situation. We have never used this. And yet, of course, in the National Library Association, they polled librarians, and either 15 or 16 said that they'd received subpoenas, but they can't reveal who their names are because they would be sent to federal prison for revealing they ever got a subpoena. So either they're all lying, either these 16 women are lying, or the Attorney General doesn't understand what's going on in the country.
Yeah, or is lying. But
well, I'm not about to say that, but I'll let you, if you want to...
Well, I mean, that's an obvious conclusion. It's an obvious conclusion. Somebody's lying.
Somebody's lying.
Okay, yeah.
Fine. So this is certainly looking at people's buying habits of books, looking at their library uses. That's concerning. And then, of course, it gets on into what you do with your money. And there are all sorts of new regulations as far as the banks are concerned, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. I got a call from a woman who had, I don't know if she'd seen a show I was on or how she got a hold of my number. But she called me to let me know that she works for a bank and that they are about to go into training regarding the Patriot Act. And most people have no idea what the training's about or even what the Patriot Act is, but it's happening. Yeah, they are. And also, too, in this New York Times article, it mentioned that they are using it to confiscate, have used it to confiscate millions and millions of tainted, they called it, money. So, you know, it suggests that if they determine that you're a domestic terrorist, they essentially just go take your money, possibly. You know, it doesn't say that specifically in the article, but but what it does is it creates this whole paranoia, you know, amongst all my friends. Most everyone I know is becoming increasingly paranoid about the abuse by the federal government of its power.
But of course, now let's imagine that there is an Islamic group over here that is actually raising money and sending it to Al-Qaeda. Shouldn't that money be, of course, subject to seizure and those people be subject to imprisonment?
Sure.
The people are
sure.
Financing the terrorists?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they should be focusing all their efforts on that. And, however, you cannot throw the baby out with the bathwater. You cannot say, you know, we live in a free country. We, you know, we have a constitution and bill of rights, and it applies to everyone. Oh, except for these guys, because we think they're terrorists. You know, you cannot start making exceptions, and that's the problem with the Patriot Act. It makes exceptions, and if you make one exception, then you've got to make another one, and another one, and another one, and pretty soon, everything's an exception potentially.
So how would you handle the Islamic terrorists or the people who are raising money for the Islamic terrorists? Shouldn't they be subjected to being investigated and the money seized?
With probable cause, with, you know, just say, look, with all, we have the laws in place. We always have had the laws in place. And we have a system of justice and a way of investigating things. And it's all based on the Constitution and Bill of Rights. And all of these guys, from the president on down to, the firemen and police all take the same oath to defend the Constitution, and there's a reason for that.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with you. The tragedy is many times our police are being told to do things that are unconstitutional. If they don't do it, they're losing their jobs. And we're going to have Jack McLam on next week talking about that very issue, and our police are coming in under increasing pressure to do things that are in violation of the Constitution. So certainly there are ways that the Islamic terrorists are collecting money and they have it in the bank. That money should be able to be seized. But, of course, then they should have to go to court to prove that it was going to be used for terrorist purposes, not simply take people's money without, of course, due process of law. And that's the frightening thing about this. There is no stipulation for due process of law.
That's right. Yeah, we either live in a country that is governed by and based upon our Constitution and Bill of Rights, and it applies equally to everyone, or we don't live in a country that's based on that. We live in something else.
That's
the choice that people have to make.
About 2 or 3 years ago, they had something called FinCEN, and it had to do with financial monitoring. And of course, it required the people working in banks to report anybody that they were in the least bit suspicious of, or they should have been suspicious of. Anybody was taking out sums of cash, several thousand dollars at a time, or structuring so that they might have over $10,000 in cash taken out during the course of the year. If you were suspicious of anybody, you were required required by the federal law to report them, and there was such an outcry from the American people that they had to back away from that. And actually, that came out of, really not, in even Washington, D.C., that came out of the United Nations and the world central banks. And now, of course, they put that in exactly the same situation under the Terrorist Act, in the name, of course, identifying terrorists. But it is exactly the same thing. Any law-abiding citizen who wants to deal in cash, of course, will be reported to the federal government. And not only that, but, of course, the people who report them face a criminal prosecution and imprisonment if they tell anybody that they've been reported. That's rather frightening.
Yeah, and that's that whole thing about being penalized, so to speak, for telling people that you have been put in this untenable situation. That's, again, like I said, the most insidious part of the Patriot Act and all these other things. And it's not just the Patriot Act, though. You know, you've got Homeland Security. You've got the one I love is the Victory Act, which has not been introduced yet. But the Victory Act creates another new crime called narco-terrorism. And essentially, as you get down into the fine print, if you smoke marijuana, you can you fall under the purview, under the definition of a narco-terrorist. All right, and so then you begin again losing your rights, just like under the Patriot Act. And these guys are shocked and awing the American this country with, you know, all these different acts that on, you know, they named like Victory and Patriot and Homeland Security and all these things that sound, I mean, how could they be bad? You know, they have wonderful names like Victory, you know, but it's an outright assault on our civil liberties. And they cannot say it's by accident. Like, you know, in the beginning they said, you know, there may be some abuses possible under the Patriot Act, but what the heck, we were in a big hurry, we were trying to fight terrorism. But now they're fighting tooth and nail to make sure that it does not get repealed, any part of it get repealed. Ashcroft did that 20 state stumping thing not too long ago.
Now, of course, the next thing is of course, they have access to your medical records in the name of fighting terrorism. And, of course, the hospitals and doctors are required to give that information, and they're not allowed to tell you that the government's collecting your information.
Well, not only that, under Homeland Security, okay, the Homeland Security Act, they can, if they determine that there's a threat to national health, they can actually require that groups of individuals or the entire country be vaccinized, for instance.
That's really under the emergency.
I'm going to make up a word here, vaccinized.
That's
so
really under
vaccinated.
That's under the State Emergency Health Powers Act, MEPA, Model Emergency State Health Powers Act. I share with you my concern, because I don't trust them. They've lied to us about vaccinations in the past.
Many
of them have been very, very harmful. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they could force people to be vaccinated with something that is not proven, and there is no liability on their part if you should die or become permanently incapacitated or come down with ALS or progressive neurological disease, that's frightening. And the fact that this is being done and there's no outcry from either the left or the right is indeed frightening to me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and again, you know, it's like this is, and I keep bringing this up because if people really want to do something about this, they really need to put pressure on the people that are our alleged representatives who have sold us down the river, who are still in office, who have proven in the past that they are willing to bow to pressure. Right now they seem to be the only pressure they're bowing to is to, you know, major corporations, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, they do, if the pressure's big enough, you know, great enough from the general population, from their constituency, they do bow to that pressure from time to time. And they are, you know, people are just not standing up and letting their concerns and their desires be known like they need to.
All right. Well, we'll talk about what the legislation is in the hopper right now, but I want to get through all the rest of the stipulations. So we've got A, you're absent, B, for your book, C, your currency, D, for your diseases, E. Now, of course, they can get a warrant and look at your emails. And why don't you get into that as far as the electronic communication? And the one stipulation on that is if you're using somebody else's computer, they don't need a warrant. Of course, they can get it without information on you without a warrant. But why don't you tell the story of the implications of this electronic surveillance now?
So the idea being they want to control pretty much everything, it seems. They want to be able to control cyberspace. You know, they want to be able to get in and like you said, you know, look at your emails. They want to see what everybody's doing and thinking, essentially, is what it boils down to. And you got to understand, it's like I'm, you know, before we go any further, we have been at the Bill of Rights Defense Committee. We're a grassroots organization. We're just pretty much, you know, normal, just citizens that have, you know, jobs and families and you know, go to school or whatever. And we're taking what little spare time we do have to devote to trying to get the word out about the evils of the USA Patriot Act. And there are, we have, you know, experts at the Bill of Rights Defense, the National Bill of Rights Defense Committee, who provide lots of information. There's the ACLU who provides lots of information, who, you know, kind of pore over this stuff with legal minds, et cetera, and give us, you know, poor, you know, working folk, you know, an overview that allows us to get the tools that allow us to you know, to work with. But so I'm not by any stretch an expert on every aspect the Patriot Act or any of these for that matter.
We're going to have a woman who's going to be done a great deal of research on this, and she'll be speaking at our conference we're going to have here on the 29th out at the Aptos Seascape. So for our listeners out there, we hope that many of you will want to come and hear Joan, and she's actually read the bill through multiple times, analyzed it, and you'll get a summary of what is really in this legislation, and then, of course, what needs to be done. And really what's so interesting is that Ron Paul, who I say would be a very, very conservative congressman, and Congressman Kucinich, who is a very, very liberal congressman, the two of them are put in a legislation called the True Patriot Bill, and of course what it is repealing most of the objectionable parts of the Patriot Bill. Have you heard about that?
I have heard, Paul's Republican, and...
You're cutting out a little bit. Are you someplace where you can get close to a regular phone? Oh, we're not getting you at all. Can you, are you on the road at the present time?
Yeah, I am. I that's what I told you when I was, can I call you back, or you can call me, in a little bit. Are you hearing me at all?
You're doing fine right now. You go ahead and keep driving wherever you're going.
Okay. All right.
And hopefully when you get to a place, then we'll call you back.
Yeah.
But I
have heard about this, and, it's, you know, we're going to wait and see how it goes. And I think everyone, again, should call their congresspeople, their local congress, man or woman, and encourage them to, in every strong possible term they can, to vote for this, to, you know, the Patriot Act has got to go if we want to continue to be a free country. That's obvious.
And, of course, it's called the True Patriot Act. It's just recently been introduced, and we recommend it to you. You can get information from Ron Paul's office or from Kucinich's office. And here's somebody who's as far to the left as you can get and as far to the right as you can get, and
right.
Yet they're joined together in a common desire to preserve our liberty. And I think that this is really what we're going to have to do, because I suspect that most of the people in your organization are on the left, and,
right.
Of course, I'm on the right. But we see the same problem. We both cherish liberty, and it's about time we join forces and begin working on the issues that we can agree on, and one of them is the Patriot Act. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question or comment on this issue, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Are there any other issues about the Patriot Bill that we haven't covered so far?
Oh, gosh. I think we've taken a good bite out of it to begin with. But I think the thing to focus on is that this is, as far as the administration is concerned, by their actions, just the beginning. They certainly don't want to get any part of it repealed. And they got Patriot 2, the Homeland Security Enhancement Act of 2003, which was leaked by a real patriot a while back, that has now been sort of put on hold, apparently, because it's so egregious. I mean, but it takes off from Patriot 1 is, for instance, it allows, if you are determined to be a domestic terrorist and convicted of a crime under the Patriot 2. I'm hearing the music. Are you there?
We're going to have to go to a break for 3 minutes,
okay.
So we'll be back in just 3 minutes with our special guest this evening, John Gibson from the local Bill of Rights Foundation, and we'll be welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. And if you're out there in the listening audience and if you agree with me that there is a problem and you'd like to become part of an organization that reaches out across all across America and 5 hours every day by shortwave and by radio and by satellite and by Internet, and you'd like to perhaps be doing something positive instead of sitting around and just complaining, I hope you'll seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family, because that's how we're able to do what we do. And that was, of course, as we are developing a good, solid foundation of people across America. We can continue expanding our coverage. We have between 59 and 60 outlets. Some of them are Internet, some of them are satellite, some of them are, most of them are radio stations, though, are weekend program going to 35 stations, some of them very significant stations across America. We need 350 at that point, why, of course, we'll reach a critical mass, and people will begin to understand how we have been manipulated and how they have played this Democrat, Republican, conservative, liberal, right-left game for a long period of time, as the same people are in control of the leadership of both political parties. And, of course, that's the message. And if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it and understand how this whole incredible scenario fits together. Well, I want to mention we're going to be having this conference. It's going to be at Aptos Seascape Golf Course. It's going to be on the 29th of November, 2 days after Thanksgiving. It's going to start, at 8:30 in the morning. Doors will open at 7:45 or 8 o'clock, but of course the program is going to start promptly at 8:30, and of course we're going to hopefully be able to give you all sorts of information on the Patriot Act and of course the church growth movement, which was a sweeping Christianity, and of course has an entirely different agenda than most of the people or most of even the ministers involved have any idea. We'll be talking about health issues. We'll be talking about Christian persecution. We'll be talking about the real reason for the war in Iraq, and it's none of the reasons that you've been actually given. I think you'll find it a fascinating time, and some of our favorite Radio Liberty guests will be there. So give serious consideration to coming. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and make your reservations, or find out how to, of course, make your reservations if you want to be sending a check. But it's important that people come and help us get the truth out so people can really begin to understand what's going on. If we can help you to get educated, then you can educate others, and we can, of course, begin to take America back. We'll be right back here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I have to mention that you're going to have reservations here because we're going to have lunch, and we have to know how many people are going to be there, and we have to know about 5 to 7 days ahead of time. So if you're going to come, get your reservations in now. And again, the number is 1-800-544-8927. That's the 29th of November, 2 days after Thanksgiving, and I promise you it'll be a fascinating, fascinating day. Well, our guest this evening is John Gibson from the local Bill of Rights Foundation group here in the Monterey Bay area in Santa Cruz. But, of course, there's similar groups springing up all across America, made up of people on the left and people on the right who are concerned about the issue of liberty. And just because the ACLU is concerned, that doesn't bother me in the least bit. As long as what they're saying is right, then we should, of course, help them and look to them to help us, because we've got to get, at least on this one issue, an understanding of how the Patriot Bill is being used to take away our freedom, not to protect us from Islamic terrorism. So if you have a question or comment about the legislation, or maybe you think it's really necessary, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or give us a call here at 464-8295, and we'd love to hear from you, get your thoughts, things that you're concerned about as far as the USA Patriot Act is concerned. In fact, it's amazing how they came up with that acronym, you know, because there's nothing patriotic about the Patriot Act, is there, John?
Nothing at all. And just to kind of respond to, I think you mentioned that I was on the left and you were on the right, something like that. Just to be in our group, we have people on you know, from left, right, and center. My leanings have always been more libertarian than anything else. I voted libertarian for the most part, you know, for the last several years. You know, although I am going to vote Democratic this time for the first time, because I think that this is a crisis situation. We need to get these guys out of office if that's possible. But yeah, I agree with you. This involves everyone. This isn't even about politics. I mean, I've never been involved in anything really political other than voting before. This is the first time. And, you know, the truth is that this transcends politics as far as I'm concerned. This is about the very, you know, the very bedrock of our way of life.
Well, I agree with you totally, and I consider myself a libertarian as well. Let's go to Nathan, who's calling from Contra Costa County. Hi, Nathan. You have a question or comment?
Oh, yes. Well, you know, it's interesting. I looked up that case of the cruise ship and the arrest there. It's interesting that the young lady was forced, essentially, to stay away from her boyfriend, and the interesting thing about that is he seemed to be the one person to claim that she was innocent or not a terrorist, and it's sort of interesting that she would be ordered to do that. I don't know how constitutional is that, and what due process procedures were followed here. I don't know enough about the case to really comment. I do know I don't feel like I'm in the same country I grew up in.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. How would you respond to Nathan, John?
As far as whether she's a terrorist or whether what she did was right or wrong, you know, there are laws against all that stuff, and I have no problem with her going to jail if that's what if she committed a crime. But it's not about that. They went after her under the Patriot Act, and that's the problem.
And
the
Patriot Act. Because the punishment would be far worse under the Patriot Act.
Well, I don't even know that that's the case, but I do know that they can circumvent due process, and that's the problem. If they can do it with her, they can do it with anyone else.
And
that's the problem. It's not about her. It's not about protecting her, defending her. I don't even know anything about the case other than what I read in the New York Times. What worries me is that they went after her under the Patriot Act and not under pre-existing laws, which would have required them to go through due process. And I also don't know that they didn't use due process, but I know that the Patriot Act allows them to circumvent that. And like I said, we're looking into that because it's important to know just exactly what abuses have occurred under the Patriot Act and specifically what those abuses were.
And I think that when people abuse the laws, prosecutors do circumvent the laws to get a conviction, that they themselves should be held responsible. And we see too often overzealous prosecutors who ignore the law and then, of course, go after people who violated it, just as they're doing. Nathan?
Well, there's one more interesting thing in this case that disturbed me, is that the girl's mother didn't support her, and she made reference to, quote, endangering her family and her reason not to. It was very, very strange. And, you know, I remember the case. I didn't think much of it. It sounded to me like she deserved what she got for doing something stupid, until I looked into it and found that maybe there's something more to this. I'm very, very paranoid.
Well, I'll tell you what, Nathan, if you have a chance, why, look it up and send it to me, would you please?
Have the chance, I'll be honest.
All right, fine.
I'm a little scared to delve into this stuff.
All right, fine.
I got to tell you, I'm just putting it out there for your audience.
All right, anything else, Nathan?
No.
All right, thanks
so
much. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But when they start using this legislation for things it was never intended for to be used for, then I think that no man's life or property are really safe. The Congress was told this had to do with the terrorist attack. And, of course, I don't believe it ever had anything to do with a terrorist attack, because it's not being used for that purpose. And they tell us, oh, well, this is why we've had no other attacks here in America. That's why we've gone almost 2 years without a terrorist attack. But, of course, they won't tell us how they've used this legislation to protect us from terrorism, because, of course, that would be a violation of national security. And we don't want Osama bin Laden to learn, of course, how we use this legislation to protect the American people. And I think when they talk about, oh, there's an investigation in process, or you're endangering national security, this is really a cover-up, in my estimation, for misuse of power by the federal government. What are your thoughts?
Oh, I agree. I don't know what else to say. You know, the whole Patriot Act deals with domestic terrorism for the most part. It does not have anything to do with what happened on 9/11. They claim it was response to 9/11, but it's obvious now that it really has nothing to do with it. It's about, it just appears to be a blatant, outright attack on our civil liberties. And the fact that they keep, you know, they had Patriot 2 waiting in the wings, they get the Victory Act getting ready to be introduced, we're told. It's just this whole shock and awe sort of thing against the Constitution that is so alarming. And again, to speak to that alarm, this needs to be combated on a grassroots level, because Congress has rolled over and played dead for these guys, and it's scary. And the only hope we feel is a grassroots effort. And like I said, these groups have formed all over the country. I would like to give an email, not email, but a website address so people can look into this a little bit further if they'd like.
Go ahead, right ahead.
Yeah. Yes, it's cruzrights.org. That's cruzrights.org. And that's our website. And from there you can get to the national website. In addition, you can get to ACLU. Many other. It's a very good place to start if you want to start educating yourself regarding the Patriot Act. And we encourage everyone to do that, because it's just, you know, they're just. It's not like there's a school you can go to learn about the Patriot Act. You know? So.
Well, what really concerns me is that I don't think the government is being honest, and I don't think that the people in the Justice Department are being honest, and they repeatedly denied that there was a Patriot Act 2 or in the wings, and so they renamed it the Victory Act, and they're trying to sneak that one in now, and it's massively to increase the federal police-state control. Now, our founding fathers, when they created America, did not want an all-powerful federal government, and anything having to do with life, liberty, and property, and crime was to be handled at the state and the local level, and the only crimes that were federal crimes were those that dealt with the relations between the states and piracy and, of course, things having to do with the military. But, of course, matters of the individual were never federal crimes. Treason, yes, was a federal crime, but there were very, very few federal crimes. And the number of federal crimes is just increasing and increasing and increasing. Yeah. And, of course, now we never should have got the federal government into enforcing drugs. Because, of course, this is not something that is in their prerogative. This is a state issue. And once you got the federal government into it, then, of course, you have this massive increase in federal monitoring of the law-abiding citizens in the name of fighting a war against drugs. When we fought a war against AIDS, we lost that war. I mean, there are 20, 30 million people already dead across the world and another 40 million infected. We got a war on drugs. It's not working. And I'm afraid that the war on terrorism's going to end up the same way. And with each of these, we lose a little bit more of our freedom.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it appears almost to be deliberate this time, quite frankly. It actually does appear to be deliberate. People need to wake up. People need to wake up, which is why I decided to get involved in this, which is why my other buddies decided to get involved in this, which is why, you know, these groups have sprung up all over the country. And hopefully, you know, we'll get to the 100th monkey and everybody will wake up.
Well, I think that the important thing is that you and your friends and, a lot of people on both the left and the right are concerned about these things. And hopefully this will serve as an educational tool, not only to try to negate this. And I think that the True Patriot Act is something everybody needs to look up and get the information on, and then begin calling and writing their senator and writing their congressman and say, if you vote against this, if you don't support it, I'm going to see that you're not reelected, something to that effect, or any way you can put it to let them know the urgency that we feel about this.
Yeah, and also, too, the Victory Act. The Victory Act, we're told, is imminent. It's supposed to go to Congress soon, and Congress needs to know that they cannot vote for the Victory Act. I mean, people have got to get a hold of it. It's on the Internet. You can get a copy of it. You can read it. You can get, analysis of it. And you need to, educate yourself and then contact your elected representatives over and over again. I write them letters, I call them, I go to the town hall meetings, et cetera, et cetera. And people need to do that. Everybody needs to do that, because they've got to know that, we're not going to put up with this if we have an opportunity to stop this by, getting rid of them. As getting them out of office next time, and that's what we're going to do. And that's really all that seems to matter to most politicians. So that threat needs to be made, you know, that threat of voting them out of office.
Well, you know, it's really very interesting that, of course, everybody, at least people I knew, were very, very concerned about Al Gore becoming the president. You know, of course, he was going to put in terrible people into the Supreme Court, and we just felt a sigh of relief when George Bush got in there. And since he got into office, he's done all sorts of things to massively increase government control over our lives and education, and then with this Patriot Act, and, of course, the wars we're into, Al Gore never could have gotten away with these things because the Republicans would have opposed him.
Right.
And, of course, a lot of the Democrats would have opposed him as well. And the way it is, all the Republicans, there's so many of them, are supporting the president. And, of course, because they have the majority in the House of Representatives and the Senate. You know, and the only way, of course, we can hope to negate this is the left-wing Democrats and those few Republicans who still believe in the cause of liberty and will not blindly follow the administration to the destruction of all freedom.
Yes, absolutely. And, again, I firmly believe it's going to take the will of the people being voiced over and over again to their elected representatives to get them those, you know, the numbers of elected representatives to change their minds, to stand up, to find their courage, to find their convictions, and to do the right thing.
I agree with you totally, and I'm just so disappointed that so many Republican elected representatives are going right along with this, you know, blindly supporting it without ever considering that it will lead to the destruction of our republic. Well, our telephone number is 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you agree or disagree, maybe you think that the Patriot Act is a good thing. If you do, we'd love to hear from you right here at Radio Liberty. Go ahead, John. I sort of interrupted you when you started to say something.
Oh, no, actually, I thought I was finished with my thought.
Okay, fine. Yeah. Well, of course, you know, of course, how much support are you getting from the local community?
Well, we've got a petition circulating and have for the last 3 or 4 months now that we, you know, in our spare time, when we have time, maybe about 20 of us have gone out and, you know, not paying anyone like ISA did to get signatures on a petition. But our petition asks the City Council of Santa Cruz drafted this resolution opposing the Patriot Act on constitutional grounds. And the original draft of it had what we call the teeth in it, where they instructed the police to refuse to cooperate with the FBI at all in any investigation or any arrest, et cetera, that would disabuse you or me of our civil liberties that are guaranteed under the Bill of Rights. And because they do take an oath to uphold to defend the Constitution, of course. And what they pulled the teeth out of it and voted in a much weaker resolution ultimately because there were concerns expressed by the city attorney. And our petition asked them to put the teeth back in, to redraft to put the language back in the resolution that allows that to happen. And we have over 2,500 signatures now, and again, on a part-time basis, people line up to sign this thing in some instances. We've had very, very few, and I've had arguments with people. I've had people come up and debate this, you know, and they always cite, fighting terrorism, but it's only been literally a couple people. Most all people, they see our sign on our table regarding the, you know, Patriot Act, and they come up and sign the thing. So, I mean, we're getting a lot of support.
Well, I think that the important thing to bring out to the people is what section of the Patriot Act talks about Islamic terrorism. Have you read the Patriot Act? Have you gone through and analyzed the Patriot Act? Well, how can you support it if you haven't? And ask them what section deals with Islamic terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing in that deals with Islamic terrorism. That is the frightening thing about it. And, of course, they can simply claim that anybody is a terrorist who objects to the way the government is going.
People that support the Patriot Act on the basis that it, you know, it's going to protect us from future terrorist attacks are, from my experience, essentially acting out of fear. It's a visceral reaction because they haven't read. They haven't even read an analysis of it. I responded to a guy on KSTO where you preferred me talking about, you know, trying to argue, make that point that we need to be protected from terrorists. And I simply asked them the question, and they're very honest with this, so which one of the 10 rights under the Bill of Rights are you willing to give up, have go away forever, to protect you from the next terrorist attack? And he thought about it for a couple seconds, and he started laughing. He says, well, none of them. And I said, that's exactly our point. You know, there is a way to do this. There has to be a way to do this without giving up our essential liberties enumerated under the Constitution and its Bill of Rights.
And I thought it was a very, very good point, you know, but you have to ask people questions rather than, you have to get them to try to think, and you have to get them to try to read the Patriot Act. It's up on the Internet, and there are lots of analyses of it, and we're going to have an excellent analysis, of course, at our upcoming conference there the Aptos Seascape on the 29th, and you'll have an opportunity to go through what does it really cover and ask questions about it, and then, of course, there'll be a summary there so that you can actually go through it point by point on your own and understand what all these issues are.
Yeah.
And we'll probably put in a copy of the True Patriot Act as well, so you'll understand the very sections of this that they, of course, want to repeal.
Right. Good. Yeah, I would encourage everyone to go to this. I'm going to go to it.
All right, fine. Well, of course, we hope that we've got to get a good turnout, and we hope that people are really going to get involved. And, of course, John apparently hasn't been that involved in the past. It takes something like this to get people out of their apathy and out of their indifference and, of course, committed to this truly epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation such as ours can long exist or shall be destroyed. You sense, you know, if you've got 2,500 signatures, that's pretty good. If you haven't had a lot of time, do people actually, you say, line up to sign this?
Not consistently, but no, many, many times we'll have, you know, 3, 4, 5 people waiting to sign this. it depends on how many people walk by, but most people that see the sign, that understand anything about the Patriot Act, walk over and sign it.
Now, whereabouts are you setting your tables up?
We've been doing it all over the place, but mostly down on Pacific Avenue in Santa Cruz.
All right, no problem with setting up a little table down there on Pacific?
Well, there's no problem with setting one up, although they have these these ordinances that require you know, speech is free, they claim, but only an hour at a time and only in certain places. So that's another issue. That's a local issue, and it's something that, you know, we were tempted to get involved in, and we were almost bullied into getting involved in at one point by another local activist group, but we decided not to, simply because, you know, if we fail at our mission to ultimately get rid of the Patriot Act, if we fail at that, if the Patriot Act remains law and is allowed to continue to maintain its course, then any local activist activity will essentially be against the law. So, you know, we're defending their rights to go out and protest as well. And this is why every citizen needs to become part of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, to become part of this, movement or whatever you want to call it, because it affects and will affect everyone ultimately.
You know, I think it's really very interesting that cities all across America, and you probably know better than I do, but it seems to me that, well, close to 100 of them have said, we're not going to abide by this Patriot Act, which, of course, is caused Attorney General Ashcroft to go out, speaking, of course, across the country, trying to convince people this is a great idea. Now, obviously, they, for the first time, are on the defensive.
Yeah.
If they can quell the dissent, then they'll come up with victory one, victory two, and progressively take our freedom in the name of fighting Islamic terrorism. If, of course, we can, of course, push the Patriot back, they're going to have to abandon all these other pieces of legislation.
That's right.
And then just try to, be able to maintain at least some form of legitimacy. So I think what you're doing is so vitally important to put them onto the defensive. And I hate to say it, but I'm proud of our city council. I disagree with much of what they do, but on this issue, I certainly support them.
Yeah, and I will add that it's not 100, it's like 154 the last count I had cities and towns across the country drafted resolutions similar to the one our city council drafted opposing the USA Patriot Act. Some of them, like Arcata and Palo Alto now, to name two, have gone so far as to, you know, have the, make the, you know, tell the police to refuse to cooperate with the FBI, et cetera. So they've actually, you know, and Arcata actually drafted an ordinance to that effect. In addition, three states, Hawaii, Alaska, and Vermont, entire states have drafted resolutions condemning the Patriot Act on constitutional grounds. So, I mean, that's huge. And that's where we're heading next, is to work. We're working with, like, Santa Barbara and some other California BORDCs to, you know, get our state to do the same thing. So, you know, I think that ultimately the states need to reunite in this one very, very important cause.
And, of course, really, legally, you have the right to say you as the federal government can't come into our county. Where in the Constitution do you have that right? You've usurped that authority. The authority represents for the local community, not with the federal government. And the 10th Amendment limits what you can do, and you, sir, are the lawbreakers. And when people understand our Constitution and begin studying it, they'd realize how it's being eroded piece by piece by piece. And, of course, as you say, which one of the 10 parts of the Bill of Rights are you willing to give up in the name of fighting terrorism?
And also, too, what gives the federal government the right to do that is very simple. It's our apathy, our lack of willingness as citizens and as local government to stand up and say, no, you don't have the right, and, you know, go away. Well, we don't do that. We let it be, you know, they're not going after us. They're going after, you know, some guy with who looks like he might be an Arab terrorist or something. We don't let them go after him, you know, and after this next guy and after this next guy. And you know, it's exactly what happened in Nazi Germany, prior to Hitler's rise. And it's so, you know, that's what gives them the right. It's our apathy. And that's what the message we're trying to get out there is, it's you know, you cannot continue to be apathetic.
I think that if the man is an Arab terrorist, he should be indicted, and of course he should use the right of habeas corpus, and he should have the right to a speedy trial and bring the information out. And of course they're saying, oh, we can't try these men because we don't want Osama bin Laden to know what we knew before September 11th. That's why we can't give their names. That's why we can't put them on trial. And of course we're holding all these people for it. And this is one of the frightening things. They're holding people as material witnesses, and they're putting them in solitary confinement, not because they've committed a crime, but as material witnesses. What a total misuse of governmental power. But the struggle through the ages has always been between the individual and the state. And the state always wants more power, and the individual always wants to be free. John, we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for being with us. I hope we can get you back onto some of our other programs.
Great. Wonderful. Thanks for having me. It's cruiserights.org. For anyone who wants future information, we have regular meetings and love to hear from everyone.
God bless you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Congratulations, you know, for what you're doing.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Okay, fine. Well, I hope you're out there, listening audience. You've enjoyed our conversation with John Gibson, and I hope that you'll want to get involved in this battle. Get the information, and, of course, help us to get it out across America. If you'd like a copy of the tape of this program, the tapes are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. Then we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, and we ask you to pray for our leaders and ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, when we'll be back once again, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.